Dr. William Luther Pierce, 1998. Nationalism versus the New World Order.
Hello. An interesting thing happened a few days ago. The government of India detonated 5 nuclear warheads in underground tests, and the establishment in the United States reacted with shock and dismay. This is good news for at least 6 reasons. I'll tell you why, one reason at a time. First, the nuclear tests were a complete surprise to the Clinton government. That's a wonderful proof of the fallibility of government for those of you inclined to believe that you can't fight City Hall because City Hall has the secret police working on its side and the secret police know everything. Our Central Intelligence Agency spends $27 billion a year to be aware of what's happening around the world, including the building of facilities for making nuclear warheads and other weapons of mass destruction. And the CIA didn't have a clue. Of course, an even better scenario would be that the CIA knew but kept it a secret from the Clinton administration. That, however, is unlikely, since the head spook is himself a Clintonista, and this Indian episode could cost him his job. The important thing that the Indian tests prove is that for all of its repressiveness and all of its money and all of its jackbooted federal thugs and all of its wiretaps and subpoenas and paid informers, the Washington government can be outsmarted by intelligent and determined patriots, not by a bunch of boozed-up yahoos who make their plans in the local bar, but by intelligent, disciplined, and determined patriots. The second reason India's nuclear tests last week were good news is that they let a lot of air out of the principal excuse given by the Clinton government for its campaign against Iraq, which nearly led us into another war in the Persian Gulf a few weeks ago, and which will lead us into a war yet if the Jews and the Clintonistas have their way. That excuse for the campaign against Iraq is that we must keep weapons of mass destruction under tight control. We must keep Iraq from developing such weapons because then we won't have control over them. Of course, India's demonstration that we've already lost control won't stop the Clintonistas from continuing to use their argument about the danger of letting Iraq develop weapons of mass destruction. But as I said, that argument will seem a bit flat now to those who had let themselves be persuaded that it was necessary for the security of everyone to keep the genie tightly corked up in his bottle. Clearly, the genie is out, and bombing Iraq into the Stone Age won't put him back. The third reason India's nuclear tests are good news is that all of the hullabaloo about countries developing nuclear weapons without permission from the United Nations should remind everyone that the most egregious example of such outlaw nuclear development is that of Israel. The controlled media, of course, have been covering for Israel, but the more fuss they make about India, the more questions thoughtful people will have about Israel. The hypocrisy of the treatment by the Washington government and the media of the whole topic of controlling weapons of mass destruction should become more apparent. Obviously, the policy of preventing unstable countries from acquiring nuclear or biological weapons is a sham. The failure to apply the policy in the case of Israel, the deliberate failure to halt Israel's development of a nuclear arsenal when the U.S. government knew that development was occurring, undermined the moral basis for the policy long ago. And we should not be surprised that no one takes it seriously today. The fourth reason we should be glad for India's nuclear tests is that they are a big psychological setback for the New World Order crowd. The liberals, the Jews, and the other New World Order boosters have worked hard to create the impression that the coming of the New World Order is irresistible. It is a steamroller, and you'd better not get in its way or you'll be squashed. The impressionable masses have let themselves be persuaded to go along for the ride, even if they aren't especially enthusiastic. One of the consolations in their eyes is the promise of security and certainty. Once the New World Order is solidly in place, no one anywhere will be able to do anything without permission from the people pulling the strings at the United Nations. And so there will be no more wars or other nasty surprises, and the masses can get on with being obedient consumers and television viewers without having to worry about making any difficult decisions. So now India has shown us that the New World Order is quite resistible after all. India has thumbed its nose at all of the people who've been assuring us that national sovereignty is passé and that in the future everyone must do whatever the UN bosses say. So, what are the Clintonistas and the Jews going to do about this little rebuff India has given them? Send a few aircraft carriers to the Indian Ocean and threaten New Delhi with cruise missiles? Not likely. It's a bit easier to push Iraq around than India, with its billion citizens and a continent to itself. The head New World Order gangster in the United States, Bill Clinton, says that India will be punished economically for daring to stand in the way of his gang. And undoubtedly, that's what will happen. Even if the head gangster changes his mind, the economic sanctions already have been written into law. And these attempts to punish India by cutting off trade, blocking loans, and other economic measures are the fifth reason why India's nuclear tests are good news. The Jews can get away with their starvation embargo against Iraq, but that sort of thing just won't work against India. On the contrary, it will have several good effects on the Indian people. It will teach them the virtue of self-sufficiency and strengthen their sense of nationalism and their determination to be masters in their own house. In fact, as soon as the threat of economic punishment was raised last week, the Indians expressed their defiance and their contempt for any American efforts to make them conform to UN policy. The Hindus always have been wary of the Jews. Back during the Second World War, when they were still under the colonial thumb of the British Empire, Hindu nationalists were sympathetic toward Germany, and they learned from the Germans many lessons about the Jews, lessons which have not been entirely forgotten. Economic sanctions against them now by the Jews' American lapdog will confirm the Hindus' antipathy toward the people who believe that their God chose them to rule the world. The more economic pressure Bill Clinton tries to bring against India, the more determined Indians will be to cut any dependence on the United Nations and become completely self-sufficient. All of that is very good. Furthermore, because many American consumer goods are now imported from India, there should be some substantial economic dislocations in the United States if Mr. Clinton starts a trade war with India. And this should help everyone to see better just how uncertain and shaky is the whole concept of a global economy. This is a good time to remember what I consider one of the most important and fundamental rules of historical development. And that rule is, decisive historical events always catch many people by surprise. And the people most likely to be caught by surprise are the smart asses who thought they had everything under control. Many decent people today are discouraged and pessimistic about the future because they believe that the enemies of our people have an unbreakable grip on the course of events. Decent people see the media almost completely under the control of the Jews. They see the Jews all around Clinton running most of the important branches of the U.S. government, the State Department, the Treasury Department, the Defense Department. They see similar situations with the governments in Britain and Russia and Germany and France, everyone bowing and scraping to the Jews, every important politician in their pockets, everyone afraid to call them to account for their crimes. They see the destruction already wrought among our own people by the Jews' policies. White kids hooked on MTV and behaving like blacks. Non-white immigrants continuing to pour into the country and the threat of a non-white majority in America in the next few decades. And they see the Jews continuing to implement their master plan for a global plantation with themselves as God's chosen overseers, the rest of the world's population as their obedient serfs, and United Nations peacekeeping forces always ready to put down any insurrection by the disarmed serfs. Decent people see these things, and they believe the Jews have everything under control. Many of them consequently become discouraged, and they give up. And so, the sixth reason why the Indian nuclear tests are good news for decent people everywhere is that they serve as an encouraging reminder of the fundamental rule of historical development I mentioned a moment ago. Nothing about the future is certain except that the smart asses will be caught by surprise, no matter how tightly they think they have things under control. And it really is a major upset of the kosher apple cart when India, with its 1 billion people and its own strategically located subcontinent, tells the Jews to take their new world order and stop it. And even more kosher apples are likely to be rolling in the gutter before the Jews have time to pick up the ones spilled by the Indians. India has had ongoing border disputes with both Pakistan and China for some time. Both of these countries will have a strong incentive now to tell the arms control people from the United Nations to go to hell and to resume the development of their own nuclear arsenals. This is an especially promising prospect in the case of Pakistan, which, as an Islamic country, has close bonds of sympathy with the Palestinians, the Iraqis, the Iranians, and the other Islamic peoples opposed to Israel's aggression in the Middle East. Every development which thwarts Washington's role as the Jews' global bully boy and enforcer is a good development. There are just two components of the Jews' power. One is money, and the other is their control of public opinion through their control of the news and entertainment media. In the West, they are able to use both their money and their media control to retain their power. They use their money to buy politicians, and they use their media control to keep the general public more or less hypnotized and aimed in the direction they want. In the East, the Jews don't control the mass media, and are not able to keep the Asian masses hypnotized. But they nevertheless have been able to use their money to corrupt Asian governments. That is, they have been able to use our money for that purpose. They have been able to use American foreign aid money and loans from various international banks and the giveaway or sale of military hardware to keep the politicians of the third world more or less under control. If Saudi Arabia wants to buy American jets for its air force, then it must promise not to make any problems for Israel. If some black potentate in Africa is encroaching on an Oppenheimer mining operation, then a few million dollars in foreign aid from the U.S. Treasury will make him mend his ways and keep his black hands off the Chosen One's diamond mines. That's the way it always has worked. There's just one thing in the third world or anywhere which can beat the Jews' money power, and that thing is nationalism. That's why the Jews, all of them, have such a hatred for every nationalism but their own, for every nationalism except Zionism. When India was ruled by the thoroughly corrupt and democratic Congress Party, the Jews were able to keep the Indians more or less under control. But in March of this year, the Hindu nationalists won control of the Indian government. And for the nationalists, independence is more important than all of the comforts money can buy. That's why India's new nationalist prime minister is willing to defy the Jews and do without American money. The Jews, of course, still will try to use their money power, that is, their control over our public funds, to bribe the Indians and others back into line. The first thing which the Clinton government announced after the Indian nuclear tests was that it was reconsidering its hold on Pakistan's purchase of American military aircraft. The sale had been held up because of Jewish objections to letting an Islamic country buy modern military aircraft. Now, says the Clinton government, if the Pakistanis will forego any nuclear tests of their own, maybe they can have the aircraft after all. And similar bribes will be offered to China and to India. The Chinese will be told that if they don't react the wrong way to the Indian nuclear tests, then their exports of machine tools and shoes to the United States won't be jeopardized in the future because of piddling little things like human rights violations. As I said, these bribes usually have worked for the Jews in the past, and their money power is what they're counting on to keep the world moving toward their goal of a kosher global plantation. Nationalism is the one force which can thwart them, the one political ideology active on a large scale in the world today in which money is not the primary concern. That is why any success by nationalists anywhere in the world today, any declaration of independence from the global plantation, is good news for decent, freedom-loving people everywhere. It is good news when it happens in Germany or Hungary or France, but it is especially good news when it happens in a place like India, which is big enough and sufficiently free from Jewish influence to be able to put a significant monkey wrench into the gears of the New World Order's machinery of global enslavement. You know, we are not nationalists in the old-fashioned sense, in the sense of geographical nationalism. We don't belong to the USA right or wrong crowd, which considers any featherless biped claiming U.S. citizenship, regardless of race, color, or creed, as a compatriot. Our nationalism is really racial nationalism. Our compatriots are our fellow white men and women, our fellow Europeans everywhere, in America, in Europe, in Southern Africa, in Australia. Nationalism in our sense, racial nationalism, is still a relatively new thing as a political ideology, although it is based on instincts much older than any ideology. A lot of people, conservatives especially, are still much more comfortable with the old-fashioned sort of nationalism, or with an ethnic nationalism which is much more limited in scope than our racial nationalism. Conservatives are more comfortable with Scottish nationalism or German nationalism or Polish nationalism. And that's all right. We encourage these more limited ethnic nationalisms at this time. We encourage any nationalism which is not anti-European or anti-white. We even welcome black nationalism or Hindu nationalism or Chinese nationalism, because nationalists of every variety are facing a much bigger threat today than any rival nationalism. Intelligent Hindu nationalists understand that Irish nationalists and Ukrainian nationalists and Swedish nationalists need not be hostile to them, and we understand that too. Every national group which is concerned with preserving itself, with preserving its unique racial characteristics, its unique language, its unique culture and traditions and lifestyles, is the natural ally of every other nationally conscious group at a time when all of us are faced with a threat of the Jews' New World Order. Once the Jews have realized their global plantation, a plantation without national boundaries, with a homogenized population, a homogenized culture, and a uniform standard of living for the serfs, every nationality will be lost permanently in the mass. Now is the time to derail this nightmare scheme for global subjugation. And any nationality, Hindu or other, which helps in derailing it by whatever means, deserves our praise and any assistance we can provide. The prospect of a nuclear arms race between India, China, and Pakistan may not seem very encouraging, but it is a far brighter prospect than a continuation of the process of globalization being promoted by the Jews and their allies, whether international capitalists or deranged liberals. So, for all of the reasons I have mentioned, India's detonation of nuclear weapons is very good news indeed for decent, freedom-loving patriots everywhere. Thanks for being with me again today.